Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Today we're joined by Derek Bronston, who is Senior Director of Mobile Engineering, Freshly. It's great to have you join us today, Derek. Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Sure, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Cool, yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting conversation. You're based in New York, is that right, yeah?
Yeah, so the company, the headquarters are in New York. It actually started in Phoenix, and now we've grown, and there's actually, we have an office in Minsk, we have one in Phoenix, we have plants in California, New Jersey, Maryland, but the tech center and the headquarters is in New York.
Excellent, excellent. So I take it you're working from home pretty much all the time now.
Yeah, since whenever New York shut down, I think March 13th or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
So we've all been working home from home since then. But prior to that, we had we still have the office. It's in Manhattan. We have three floors on 23rd Street in Manhattan. And there are some people going in. My team in particular is split between Minsk and New York. So it doesn't really affect me too much to be home.
It was pretty amazing though. I mean, when everyone did have to make that shift to work from home, how quickly like the tech industry just responded so well to it. I mean, my brother works as an iOS developer and it was one day he was in the office, you know, every day. And then, you know, one lunchtime he just came back and just set up at home and just started working from home. And it's just amazing how quick, you know, that turnover can happen, how smoothly that was. It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I actually work from home. Like, this is only the second kind of company I worked for that wasn't my own, to be honest. So I worked from home, you know, contracting and running my own companies and things for a long time. I was actually kind of like, I enjoyed not working at home for a while because sometimes like the work-life balance when you work at home gets thrown off. And I actually think probably from a tech perspective, I actually think I'm more productive and I think my team's more productive actually working from home. Like, I actually don't think the office is necessarily a productive place in terms of work. I mean, I think it's productive kind of creatively to meet with people and talk with people and things like that. So anyways, we've been remote since March, you know, just like a lot of people. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I think what's going to be interesting is actually what happens when the pandemic is over. And now, you know, for example, with my office, you know, there's all these people, like I'm one of the older people. So a lot of people are younger, a lot of the ICs and the engineers and product people and stuff. So they've all, especially people without kids, like they're all traveling. You know, my one friend, he got a, you know, he's been like staying in Yellowstone Park for 3 months and coding from there and this place. And they're like, someone moved to Miami and someone moved to California. And I don't know what's going to happen once this is over and then the office gets reconvened.
Yeah.
Because I think that number one, definitely productivity is higher for engineers, you know, being remote for sure. You know, because we were in an office that was one of those offices that were all open, right? Mm. Which is nice. It's like, and you know, it's like a nice vibe, but I feel like people are always talking. It's very difficult. You just have to put your headphones on and zone in, right? Especially if you're an IC. I mean, you know, currently I started as an IC there, but now most of my day is meetings. So I'm not actually coding a lot at the moment. I mean, I do keep my hands in the code to a certain extent. We can get into that in a minute, but so I think what's going to be interesting, and you know, I've seen other articles about this, is what happens when, you know, are we going to come back to what normal was or the new normal? Mm. And how does, you know, what's the relationship, really what the relationship between product and engineering is going to be? Because I feel like product probably, and that and marketing and that sort of aspect of the company definitely probably wants to be back in the office.
Mm.
You know, and, yeah. And they also, you know, their whole life is meetings and collaborating. And I think what has made this possible, because you were saying that like tech adapted quickly to the remote lifestyle, is that the meetings, since everything's on Zoom or whatever, it's leveled the playing field.
Yeah,
and so
totally.
I think it's challenging to go back to a playing field that may or may not be as leveled. So I don't know. Anyways, I'm not sure what the answer to that question is, but
you know, that's one aspect of, you know, day-to-day working life is better from home for a lot of people, right? But in terms of like progression in the industry, I mean, do you think is that been stilted by working from home, or is that more difficult? Or because I presume it would be for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe it's because, you know, you're not seeing people. You can kind of like stagnate almost, do you think?
I we've grown a lot and we've done a ton. I mean, I think there's pluses and minuses. I think there is something about having a software architecture meeting or a grooming session or whatever in person and collaborating and going back and forth. Mm. But I don't feel that I can't get that from Zoom when everyone's on it. So I think there's been a lot of innovation and a lot of progression, you know, given the circumstances. And I'm not necessarily advocating that everything should be remote. Like, there's definitely like a social element, you know, that's missing. You know what I mean? Because there was, you know, we had a pretty social office. We had a lot of engineers. I mean, we do have engineers in other offices, but they have offices as well. They're not all remote. It's not all like a contractor thing. Like, we have an office in Minsk and we have an office in Phoenix, and those people are in offices as well, and they're part of the company. So, you know, so we don't have, you know, in the past we would have happy hours and game nights and, you know, all this kind of stuff like that. So, like, kind of team building things. So, like, that, I don't think team building I find difficult over Zoom. I mean, you can have a happy hour with 50 people, like in the little tiles, and I've done that, and it's better than nothing, but I think everyone's getting tired of that.
I mean, yeah, I remember it was like within like the first few weeks of lockdown, and everyone was from home all the time, and, you know, there was a lot of people that were having to do like Zoom quizzes like weekly with their friends or like the colleagues. And like, luckily I've only got about 5 friends, so I only had to go to one. And it was torturous. It was bad. So I want to find out about the culture, because we've touched upon it a little bit at Freshly. But I mean, you know, we were speaking before we hit record, and quality over quantity with code and, like, you know, no errors and things like that. I mean, is that something that you're really hammering home at Freshly? Is that a big part of the culture, would you say?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, actually the reason I joined Freshly was for that reason. So, you know, I've been doing this a long time, right? So when my first professional coding job was probably in 1996 or 7 or something like that. And then, anyway, so I've been through things and I've done a lot of client service and this and that. But when I was looking for a new position, I joined Freshly in November 2016. You know, I was primarily looking for a place to work that had an engineering culture where it was quality over quantity. Mm. You know what I mean? Because most places aren't. Like, I've done a lot of work. I've worked for Citibank, ESPN, Best Buy, a lot of big companies, contractors. As you know, I owned a company, a dev shop, for a long time. We did a lot of big things. And most of the time you're not offered the latitude or the time to execute things that correctly or with that level of fastidiousness. But Freshly, so when I first joined Freshly, I think I was engineer 4, and there was maybe 100 people who worked there. Now we have, I don't know, pushing 3,000 employees and maybe,
wow,
7 engineers or something like that. But in any case, I think it's because, like, that quality over quantity culture is all throughout Freshly, not just the engineering culture. Yeah. When I first joined, I was only thinking about engineering culture. Like, basically, I was looking for a job where the engineering culture was focused on quality over quantity and something, you know, I needed to be somewhat interested in the product. Like, I wasn't looking necessarily for food per se, but I do, you know, this as an aside, I do like the fact that we're not just purely digital. You know, we're selling out, like, you know, food. Yeah. And we're integrating plants. So there's a mix between the digital side, or the engineering side fuels the brick and mortar side. So yeah, that's kind of interesting to me, you know, 'cause I've been involved in a lot of, you know, done a lot of work for things that were purely digital. In any case, yeah. So the original, I mean, the CTO who's still there, and there was at the time the chief of engineering, if we're very, you know, pro quality over quantity. And I think just stemming because it's a food business, you know, so food safety is super, super important, right? So, and I didn't realize this at the time, but I really think that it stems up from that culture where you can't make a mistake, right? You know, there's extreme, extreme care taken with food, you know what I mean? And that bubbles up into extreme care taken with, you know, designing the packaging, with the, you know, like the way packaging is done and the eco-friendliness of the packaging. And then also with the engineering culture. So we have a very, a culture where it's definitely frowned upon. Like, you're less frowned upon for moving slow than making mistakes.
Really. I just think it should always be that way. I mean, it has to be, surely, because, you know, I mean, I've never heard of a business saying they kind of, their philosophy is quantity over quality, but you'd be very, very worried if it was.
Well, no, I agree. But there's definitely, I think with software, and I feel like this trend is changing a bit. You know, I've been doing it since sort of web one, you know, and but there's definitely like a period of time where, you know, move fast, break things was kind of popular.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't really adhere to that philosophy. Mm. You know what I mean? I mean, there's times where that's okay. Mm. But for example, you know, our apps and our website and everything are fueling customers, you know, management of their meal orders and things. So it's and also fueling, you know, interacting with the production of meals and things like that. So it's tied into the overall food experience. So, you know, having like errors in business logic, you know, are bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we pretty much, I mean, not to say that nothing ever happens, but it's very, very rare. And we, you know, we have like almost 100% uptime and almost 100% crash-free apps. You know what I mean? So that's definitely, you know, something that we put a lot of emphasis on. And we've, you know, so I joined that culture, or I joined that company, and that was, you know, part of the culture. And, you know, over time, as I've progressed through my positions, you know, I've helped develop the engineering team from mobile and develop processes around that to kind of ensure that. Because I feel like, especially with native apps, making mistakes on iOS or Android is pretty costly. You know, with the website, you know, I've done a lot of web development too. And it's not like it's good to make an error on your website, but you can push out a change that affects every user within a minute. And so with an iOS app, even if you do kind of expedited review from Apple and you get it reviewed in an hour or whatever, which is possible, it's still going to take, you know, 3-4 weeks or whatever for your user base to fully adopt the app, unless you force upgrade them or something, you know what I mean? Which we rarely do. And we actually generally only do when there's like dramatic business changes that we have to, you know, handle in that way, not really because of errors. So in any case, it was really important to me to come to a place where I was going to get the time to develop in a way where we could really be quality driven.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And so you've obviously gone from, you know, an engineering role, and then now you're in a position of management and leadership. So there's a lot of times, and there's a lot of people that I speak to who have done a similar thing. They say that they really miss being hands-on with engineering. And some people even do the thing where they kind of like go into leadership and then step back down and kind of like to and fro almost. I mean, did you find that it was quite difficult to take your hands off the actual engineering side of things?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yes, but it's a different challenge. Like, I've been engineering for a long time, and I still do engineering a lot, not necessarily at anything time sensitive and freshly, but on the side for myself with open source libraries, and also within Freshly, any new technology that we use within the Android or the iOS app or on the Ruby stack that we're integrating within, especially within mobile, like, I'll get in there and learn it. so that I understand it. And I'll write, you know, I write a certain amount of code, you know, because I feel that as a director, and even with my engineering managers, you know, I encourage them to write, you know, a certain percentage of code. I mean, it can't be the main aspect of their job, but you need to stay relevant, right? People need to respect you. And you also need to understand how things are working. You, like, I feel, I mean, at this point, like, I don't have, I mean, I guess if I had 1,000 people on my team, that would be different. You know what I mean? Maybe it would be impossible, but I would still try to stay relevant with, you know, with whatever Apple's coming out with, you know, like spending time with Swift UI or paying attention to the updates with Xcode and testing platforms and things like that. So I do enjoy engineering, and I have talked to other people who had a similar kind of career path and then going back to being, let's say, a principal engineer or something like that. And, you know, I can empathize with that, but I think it's a new challenge. You know, the thing that I kind of get off on is systemic problem solving. Like, I like systemic problem solving. Like, even before I had that a word for that, or like I knew what that was when I was a kid, you know, I liked systemic problem solving. And that, you know, that applies to a lot of things. You know what I mean? Like, it can be software, it could be running. I'm also a jazz musician. Like, music is systemic problem solving, you know, whatever, you know, learning whatever skill it is. So I feel scaling a team, an engineering team, is systemic problem solving, but, you know, involving human resources.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a really interesting way to look at it, you know?
Yeah. And I, you know, so it's interesting to me, like, you know, like, so figuring out, you know, what, like, you know, how to design a process for humans to interact with that is going to deliver the highest quality product I can for my company. That's, you know, and it, I mean, it changes a lot. You know, I make mistakes, you know, or, you know, we morph, you know, like, we start doing things in a certain way and we realize, okay, it'll be better. You know, we could modify this to make this process better or whatever. You know, I'm constantly reevaluating our process as an engineering team and trying to listen to engineers and trying to, you know, measure output, not just quantitatively, but also qualitatively, just to one, you know, ensure developer or engineer happiness and in relation to product quality. You know what I mean? Because part of ensuring product quality is ensuring engineer happiness. You know, because you could just hire robots or whatever. You know, if you just dictate to people, you know, code this thing and you don't have any input, you know, you probably have a high turnover in terms of, you know, employee retention.
Mm-hmm.
But we have, you know, for example, I have most of my engineers, I have a lot of engineers that have been there for 2-3 years. Like, we have a very low turnover at Freshly in general for employees. And I think that's because I actually think that engineers want to do quality work, and oftentimes you're not given the time to do it, especially if you've come from more of a client service thing. I think if you're working in a more product oriented company, you oftentimes can do it. But I have worked for companies where it was a single product and it was a mess. So
do you think, there's one thing that I've been wanting to, that stuck out to me there. I mean, do you think it's possible for someone who's not from an engineering background to then, you know, be a leader of engineers or an engineering manager or director? Or do you think it's imperative that they've taken those, like, steps up?
I mean, I think, well, you know, it depends on how you're going to manage. I mean,
I've never heard it before. Heard anyone, you know, lead a team of engineers without being one before.
Yeah. I mean, that's not how I would run it. You know what I mean? Cause, like, for example, my engineering managers, you know, I rely on them a lot, and they were ICs for me prior. And, you know, they also need to really understand what's going on and kind of, you know, they're dealing a lot with human processes, but part of the human process, like, the manager is oftentimes trying to figure out, okay, why is this engineer blocked? Or what other, you know, some other part of the company, like, there's some other issue in the code base that's affecting mobile, and they have to go hunt it down and then, like, connect with other, you know, people on other teams and whatever. So they definitely need technical expertise. I mean, I think you could be, I don't think technical expertise makes you a good manager. You know what I mean? But I definitely want technical expertise in my managers. I mean, as well as, you know, you need a balance of EQ and IQ.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So like, it's a human thing, you know, so, you know, they need to be thinking about, you know, their job is like, they're having the one-on-ones with engineers and they're listening to their problems and, you know, okay, I feel overworked, or like so-and-so, you know, made a comment and they pissed me off or whatever, you know what I mean? So they're trying to smooth things over, and then they come to me and they might say, Derek, you know, I think, you know, maybe we should modify our process this way because people are, you know, it's slowing people down or people are grumpy about it. And then, you know, we'll kind of think about, okay, so what would happen? Like, how would we modify this? And like, where's the problem? And what's the bottleneck? And how would we modify it? And can we modify it in a way that still ensures product quality? You know, because I'm not going to modify something just because people don't like it. You know what I mean? That rarely comes up. I mean, part of a big challenge is it's really about your hiring, right? If you hire people in, yeah. So, you know, I don't know if we have like a stringent hiring process. I think we have a fairly real world hiring process. Like, we want certain things. For example, we have, you know, testing is a really big part of our culture, right? Like, right, a lot of unit tests, a lot of behavior tests, et cetera, et cetera. So we do a lot of testing, which I can talk about more later. But if you're a person who doesn't, you know, is anti-testing, that there are engineers that I meet who think unit testing is they don't agree with it or whatever. Or maybe they agree with it, but they haven't, you know, they don't know how to do it so well, which might be okay if I was hiring, let's say, a junior or mid-level and I was going to train them in. But if I was hiring a senior level engineer, I would expect them to be very good at writing tests and write code that's very testable. And in our interview process, that's a big part of our interview process. Actually, you know, I mean, I could talk about our interview process if you want. Like,
that could be interesting.
Yeah. So we have three main parts, right? So you come into the interview. I mean, after you've talked, you know, on the phone and things like that. But like, once you come into the actual interview, so we have a PR. So it's either so I have sort of three teams under me. Like, I have a set of Ruby engineers, a set of iOS engineers, and a set of Android engineers. And so let's just talk about mobile, like iOS, for example. So if you came into an iOS interview, the first thing we would do, we have a PR on GitHub, and it would be, and there's a spec, and it's a fully functioning feature, right? With a spec, with designs, it's fully coded, et cetera, et cetera. And the first thing we do is like, do a code review on this,
right?
And put the comments in. So you sign into Git and you do a code review. And there's actually, you know, we have it all mapped out. There's actually there's parts of the spec that are executed slightly incorrectly. There's a little technical like memory leak here. There's a little technical thing here. So there's things that are in there that we want to see if you catch them, right?
Right, okay.
I mean, so that's the technical side, right? Like, what's important to you when you review code? You know, some people review code and they're going to write 50 comments about, you know, I don't like the way this is named. I don't like the way this is named. I don't like the way this is named, kind of that kind of thing, which may or may not have validity. Or, you know, are you going to come in and actually like, see how this is this working? Do you look at the spec and is this working to spec? And are these tests actually testing the code? Like, those are the things I look for. Like, if someone came in and was doing a code review, you know, the way I would do a code review is I would run all the tests and then I would look at the tests to make sure that the tests actually are testing the code accurately. Just because the test passes doesn't mean it's a good test. You know what I mean? So in any case, you know, so we would go through. So that's kind of the technical side. And then there's the EQ side, you know, do you write, you know, are your comments, you know, nice? You know what I mean? Like, you know, and constructive, I guess, right? Because I think it's like, I like reviewing code, and I think reviewing code among the team should be a constructive, fun thing. You know what I mean? So people need to be, you know, have EQ with that. You know, you're not going to just dog out someone's code and be, you know, this sucks. You know, like, you know, like, this could be better with this. How about this suggestion? You know what I mean? Or something like that. Or this isn't working. You know, if people make mistakes, but even if they make mistakes, I think it's important to be respectful, right? So that's the absolutely. So I think that's a good real world thing. Come in and how does this person do a code review? And you can see you're doing it on Zoom or you're doing it in person. And, you know, did they like pull the repo and run it? You know, some people just like look at the code and they didn't run it. Like if you didn't run the code, that's like a red flag for me. You know what I mean?
Well, it's you're putting them in kind of like real, you know, working life situations and just kind of monitoring it. And it's a really good way to do it. I mean, you know, I was saying earlier, my brother's an iOS developer and I've heard some horror stories from interviews that he's had. I mean, there was one for one of the big TV production companies in the UK. I won't name who it is, but it's quite obvious. And it was really, really formal. And like, they didn't let you go on the internet. You had to do like memorized, you know, kind of things like, you know, memorizing, I'm not sure the terminology, but like patterns and things like that. And it's like, where people, like literally one or two people sit there and watch you do this in, you know, real life when they're wearing suits and things like that. And it takes like 6 or 7 hours of the day. And I just think it's quite an old fashioned way of interviewing people because you're not setting people up for success there. And you're definitely not going to get the best out of them. And, you know, if you think, But if you think about the real job, it's like the internet is there and engineers will use it. You know,
I agree with you. I mean, I think I think in the conversation, like we will have conversations too, right? And you can ask things, you know, I think with the whiteboard interview, you know, I mean, there are some things that are valid about asking technical questions and seeing, I mean, basically, especially if it's a senior person, does this person understand computer science at kind of a low level? And do they understand the concept of performance? I think that's particularly important for mobile developers. You know what I mean? I mean, Freshly we're not dealing with big amounts of data, so that's not, doesn't tend to be the hugest issue, but I want to see that. I mean, we don't do that kind of whiteboard, you know, where we are writing merge sort algorithms and things like that, or guessing, you know, the number of times an egg bounces. But I think you can ask some questions that get at, you know, does this person kind of have an understanding of how things perform? But we do tend towards the real world. So that first step is kind of the review process, right? And then the second step that we do is a refactor process. So we have another fully functioning GitHub repo where it's done really kind of, it works 100%. But it's done in a way that's not really like scalable, right? Kind of very, very like not well, you know what I mean? And then we see like, how do we rewrite this? Because that's the other part of the job, right? The three parts of the job that you're going to end up doing are you're going to review code, you're going to refactor code, and you're going to write code from scratch. Yeah. So our interview, aside from the talking part, which we do discuss, you know, technical things, is first part is code review, second part is refactor, and we see how you would refactor something. And then the third part is actually we give you a spec that's actually kind of loosely formed because we want to see what you're going to do with it. And then we have you build out a feature, but we let you take that home.
Cool.
And speaking to what you were discussing before, you know, we won't put limits on it. It will say, you know, you can use whatever libraries you want. You know, you can do it the way that's comfortable to you. Because we can get a sense of how you're, like, we have a way that we do things. And, you know, if you're a good engineer, you're going to be trainable in, you know, whatever. If you want to use whatever, like a certain architectural pattern over another architectural pattern or whatever. Like, I would say, you know, I want you to execute this thing. But you can do it in the way that is comfortable to you. But, you know, mainly what we're going to look at is, does this person follow the spec, you know, and did they write tests and do the tests work and does the code, you know, I mean, we can just like look at their code and actually see how they wrote it. And we'll give them a week to turn it back in or whatever.
Well, it sounds like a really good way to interview. And it sounds like you've actually put a lot of thought into that, but it definitely, it's well worth doing. I mean, some people don't really put as much effort into that kind of, you know, interview and recruitment process as they should, really.
Yeah, well, like I was saying before, like systemic problem solving. I mean, so I have put a lot of thought into the hiring process. I mean, for one, I was the original person. I hired the whole team to right. start with. So it was my process. Now it's expanded out, you know, and I have people doing it for me, but we're still following that essential process. I mean, I wrote the original PRs and now, you know, my Android guy writes, I wrote that one too, but he wrote it because he can do it better than me and things like that. We still follow that process and then we modify where applicable. But to be honest, we've been following that kind of real world process for a few years and we haven't modified it much. I mean, we've modified maybe the PRs a little bit or whatever, but in terms of a process, you know, we do it. And the one main thing we modified is we didn't, in the past, and this was a mistake, I used to sit there and we used to sit with the person when they did the implementation part, but there wasn't enough time to do it really. So, and I feel like that's like a weird pressure to have like a director of engineering or someone like watching you code.
Yeah.
You know, because that's not real.
No, I would crumble in that situation. And I'm sure like even really confident, you know, engineers would really struggle with that. I mean, that's so much pressure, which you just wouldn't have in your normal day, really.
Yeah, so the way that we do that is, I mean, so we'll give you a spec. And actually, so the spec for the review process is very fully formed. And the spec for the implementation is kind of more general. And then I want to see how we'll spend time, like maybe an hour, and have them, you know, how would you approach architecting this, you know, and see how, so like kind of whiteboard, but not the whiteboard approach that you're discussing prior. Like, you know, we want to see what's your thought process for thinking about this, but then take it home and work on it. And you can change even what you did. It's just more to get a sense of how you would discuss it. But I think an important thing to think about for all aspects of running any kind of team, engineering or otherwise, is to allow people the space to do it. Because oftentimes the extrovert is very rewarded and especially with engineers, but not even with engineers, there's a lot of good introverts out there and you got to give them space to work. You know what I mean? And they might, or someone might not react well to you hovering over them or whatever. And I don't think that's necessarily should be a tick against you.
There's one thing that I've really started to appreciate whilst, you know, meeting people on this podcast is good management, because it's really, really impressive. And also I find good management, if you've got a really good manager, it goes kind of under the radar because you don't notice it. You can notice bad management really, really quickly and really easily. But it's far more difficult to notice good management because they just kind of let you do what you want to do and it's almost seamless. But it's a really impressive like balancing act that, you know, leaders and managers, you know, have to do. I'm sure I'm sure you've got a lot to juggle, and it's like, I just find it really impressive, really.
Well, thank you. I mean, it is a lot to juggle, and it's also a team, you know. I mean, there's a lot of people that I'm working with who help me facilitate that, you know. You know what I mean? Like, I have really good people working with me, and in the company in general, there's really good people. And so I'm always working with different team mates and we support each other. You know what I mean? Because it's not, I mean, I'm trying to be a good manager and I've learned, you know, it's been a long process because I did own a company, you know, for a few, I did own two companies and I managed people. And this is going back a long time ago. And I think back on those days, this was like 2004 to 2011 or something. I owned a company basically. And I think about how I was managing then and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, it's something you have to kind of learn and kind of craft, isn't it? I mean, were you taught in any way or have you learned on the job?
You mean in terms of management?
Yeah. And leadership.
Well, freshly. Yeah. I mean, freshly invests a lot. I mean, they've sent us to, you know, 3-day retreats and things like that, where we've had a lot of leadership training. I mean, I didn't go to any kind of management school, You know what I mean? I've read books, I listen to podcasts, I talk to people. But I would say that, you know, there's been two or three management trainings that are pretty intensive, you know, like 3 or 4 8-hour days in a row kind of thing, you know, where they set up directors when you get promoted. And I did get a lot out of that because what I realized for myself personally, like I remember having this realization at one of these director trainings and someone asked me a question about how would you solve this issue? And it was a very huge, it was a very like team process issue, right? And my answer was very like, you know, quantitative kind of software data-driven answer, right? That which was not what the guy was looking for. And I realized, I mean, I had an epiphany. I remember thinking, oh, I don't have any sense of EQ. Like I'm very, like that's a part I've had to get better at. You know, I'm good at writing like programs and figuring out ways to quantify progress and things like that. And that's good, you know, but it's the balance, you know, like when you have a system and there's humans involved, you know, it's not as binary, you know what I mean? And then it requires, and different people respond differently, you know what I mean? So I, you know, like learning how to, you know, interact with different people and listen to them and not bulldoze over them and all that kind of stuff. So I actually, so to Freshly's credit, they take a lot of, you know, they put a lot, invest a lot of resources into their management teams. And, you know, I went from IC to tech lead to director to senior director and all through those different paths, they've given me some training, but I didn't go to a management school. I've just been, I've been engineering for 20 years, but, and I have managed people, some fairly big teams over time. But I would say that really until Freshly, like I'm much better at it now than I was 10 years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I didn't think about it as a skill.
It definitely is a skill though. Do you think so?
Yeah, no, for sure. Like I think about, you know, I remember when I was first moved in kind of management at Freshly, and I was living in Brooklyn, and I would drop my daughter off at school in Manhattan, and I would walk to work, and I'd have like a mile or two walk. And every morning I would think about like, okay, what kinds of like all pure management things, like what kind of, you know, what do I need to do for my team today? What are the boxes I need to check? That's, so going back to an earlier question when you were discussing, like, do I miss kind of being an engineer? And I mean, yes and no, but I like, you know, problem solving the human systems too. But I think that in order to attempt to be a good manager or leader, you actually need to think of it as a separate skill.
And also I find it's natural for humans to want to progress. So when engineers get to that level, I think most of them do take that step up to management and, you know, give it a go almost.
Yeah. I mean, I waited a long time because, you know, but it was a natural progression from my company's perspective. Like they were, you know, sort of promoting me along that path. I hadn't thought that much about it in that way. You know, I wasn't, number one, I owned companies. I guess when I owned my own company, I was essentially a CTO. So I was kind of at a management level. But I was coding a lot though, you know? So when I owned this company called The Conspiracy in from 2007 till like 2013 or something. And we were a small kind of dev shop and design sort of dev shop. And, you know, we would scale up. Like if we got a really big job, we might scale up and kind of get 10 contractors or 4 of us who owned it, or I just did all the coding. So when we scaled up, I would just sort of manage it. And then, but like 50 to 70% of the jobs were kind of smaller and I would just like, was like an engineer.
You know, that's a pretty cool way to work.
Yeah, it was cool. It was good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was a good way to work. You know, two things happened. Like that was the cool. So in 2007, I started that company with some friends. And so our business model, this was kind of pre all the cloud sort of things that exist now. So we were basically, we had sort of like some bigger like brand clients like Remy Martin and Virgin Music and these sort of big companies. Like in New York, those companies are all there. So they're kind of, you know, you can meet them. And we were basically, our business model was to sort of go in and analyze their workflow and then design kind of custom cloud software for them to like improve their workflow.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, now nowadays I wouldn't, you know, I would just say buy Git, like whatever off the shelf software product, but those things didn't really exist that much then. But then there was a financial crisis, you know, like in 2007-08 or whatever. Like, and then we just ended up being very, very clients, like even more client service. So we were kind of always innovating products and doing client service kind of concurrently. And I wanted to be basically a company where we built products, and some of my partners were more, they're coming more from like design agency kind of mentality, and they were more comfortable in that realm. And so I ended up leaving to just join another company, and then ultimately Freshly, because I just wanted to work kind of on a single product.
Yeah. That makes sense. I think that's a nice point to end on, actually. We've almost come completely full circle there. All right. It's been really nice to meet you, Derek, and I've really enjoyed chatting with you. So,
and it's nice meeting you too. You know, hopefully I'll get back to England soon.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.